episode 174, BulaNetwork.com. Hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Your friends ask you that question all the time. You know they do. How do you go about making wise decisions? What's the thought process? What questions do you ask yourself? Let's talk about it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at BulaNetwork.com. If you're a first-time listener, special welcome for you. Bula, by the way, is a Fiji term. It means both hello and goodbye. It's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. No, I'm not from Fiji. I've never been to Fiji. Hope to go one day. Came across the term 35 years ago or so. Just thought it was a cool word. It's used as a greeting, and so that's how I would use it. In written memos in the company that I was running at the time, I would use Bula, B-U-L-A, exclamation mark. That was the greeting. Yeah, oh yeah, sure, I had to explain it at first, but people caught on. So it made sense that when I began to do my own thing, well, Bula just had to be in the name. And so hence was born Bula Network. Now, it wasn't initially a network like we think of networks, like a broadcast network. It was a network of business, coaching, consulting services, but it has really morphed into, obviously, more than that with the advent of new media and podcasting. Didn't start out that way, though. So there you go. Brief history lesson. Welcome. Welcome to the show. We emanate from a place that I call the Yellow Studio, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, where today it is scheduled. Do they schedule weather? Well, I don't know. God probably schedules weather. The weather is scheduled to be like 91 degrees. And then I was looking somewhere on the internet and social media and saw that some of the people that I'm connected to in that space, they got snow. No, not here. Not here. Okay, let's talk about making decisions. We all make decisions. I get phone calls and text messages, and these can be things from very small things. For instance, right now, my son and my daughter-in-law are in house hunting mode, and there are some other younger couples that I know that are in house hunting mode, and I will sometimes be asked, particularly by my son, to go look at a house that he and his wife are looking at, and they will solicit input from my wife and I and ask us the question that many of us get asked by our friends and acquaintances and family. What do you think? We want to know what other people think. And in the case of my son and my daughter-in-law looking at houses, what they want is they want a couple of other pair of eyes looking at this thing from a different perspective to see, as more experienced house buyers, do we see anything? Is there anything about this house that, you know, we should be concerned about? So these are kind of how these things go. But what about your own life? So put yourself in his shoes or in the shoes of anybody who's making a decision, especially a big decision like that. And I'm not talking about decisions like, where are we going to go eat lunch? Because many of those kinds of decisions, and it is interesting that people can just agonize over such things, but come on, who cares? Well, we care at the time when we're hungry, and if somebody brings up a suggestion of a place, and we really don't like that place, and we really don't like that kind of food, we really don't want to eat there. So I'm not at all dismissing the importance of seemingly small, insignificant, even mundane decisions, because they do add up. They do add up. Have you ever been with a group of people and it was suggested by someone to go to a place that you really didn't particularly like? You really would rather not go there, but it seemed that the group momentum carried everybody in that direction, and you didn't want to be the odd guy out. You didn't want to make a big deal. It was just easier for you to go along, and so you acquiesced and you went. But it did affect your mood. You ever had that happen to you? Don't say no. You've had that happen to you. We've all had that happen to us. So I'm not going to dismiss the small things, the small decisions that we make, because they do affect how we feel. They affect our mood. They affect our emotions. And, well, that's life. I mean, that's just part of life. And no, life is not always fun, and it's not always, you know, getting your way. But now let's pull back and let's really think about the bigger decisions of life. And I'll tell you exactly what brings this up, and it's true confession time. I have been faced with a number of decisions in my life, and I'm facing some decisions right now. And some of those decisions have to do with business, and they have to do with what direction are you going to take and how are you going to take that direction. Should you take this direction over another direction? These are difficult decisions, and they aren't made easier because you have time and experience and knowledge on your side necessarily. I'm not saying that those things don't help, but for instance, I'm 55. I'm on the cusp of turning 56, and that's very different than being 25 on the cusp of turning 26. And the decisions that I make now are in light of that age and that experience and where I'm at in life. I'm not where I was when I was 30 years younger. I'm not where I was then. I'm not there financially. I'm not there geographically. I'm not even there when it comes to my marriage. I mean, I was married 5 years, and now I've been married 35 years. I had two small children. I now have two grown children, and I have four small grandchildren. So I'm at a completely different place in life. And as you face decisions in your life and you look back and you have experience, just like my wife and I, for instance, we have experience in buying more houses than my son and my daughter-in-law. They've purchased one house. My wife and I have purchased, I don't know, more than one house. Now, we haven't purchased a house in this economy. We have not purchased a house in 2013, which is what they are trying to do, having sold their house in 2013. I have neither sold nor bought a house in 2013. And this market is very different. All you got to do is watch the news and you can see. I have not seen anything like it in my lifetime, and I'm old. I mean, people are putting their houses on the market here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and of course, it depends on the area. I mean, my son sticks a sign in the front yard. It's a for sale by owner. We built a website so that he could, and he registered a domain name. It was easy because we knew, okay, people driving by, you know, can they really take advantage of a phone number? And made a website that was easy for folks to remember. Got that up. I didn't even have that up. He stuck the for sale sign in the front yard on a Monday and had the offer on Wednesday. I mean, who does that? He has done something that I've never done. So in that regard, experience, it's a good teacher, and it does hopefully propel us toward greater wisdom. But just because you did something in the past doesn't mean that that's how things are today, because, well, time and all that, time and distance. So here I am today facing some decisions, and I begin to think about the process, and I begin to think about what is it we do, and what might be some best practices for us making these kinds of decisions. And let me begin by telling you how historically I have approached things. And I'd love to hear your comments. You can either go to the website, find episode 174, and leave a comment there. I'd love to hear it by way of email or social media. You take whatever platform you choose. How do you do it? What do you find has worked for you in making decisions? Here's typically what I have done. And it really is, it's simple, but it's difficult. Just because something is simple does not mean that it's easy. And this is not at all easy, but it's really just been a pro and a con kind of a thing. But for me, it has all been summed up in a single question. And that question is, what's the worst thing that can happen? I have been criticized by some privately, and I understand the criticism, and I happily accept it, by the way, that I should think in a more optimistic way. I should think not what's the worst thing that can happen, but I should think what's the best thing that can happen. And I do that, but that's not first. The first thing I always think about, and is this just how we're wired, do you think? Because I tend to think so. What's the worst thing that can happen? And I don't feel like I'm a pessimist, but I'm certainly not an optimist. I am not the guy who's going to look through rose-colored glasses and see it in its perfect, ideal state. Admittedly, I am way more cynical than that because I do know that things can go wrong, and I know things do go wrong. And my personal philosophy has always been to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. Now, a lot of people say that. I genuinely, that's just where I naturally gravitate. Should I have been bucking that all along? Should I have been trying to teach myself to have a more positive outlook and to not even consider that failure might happen or to consider that this might go awry? Maybe. I confess I have not done that. So my first question has always been, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I've said repeatedly, I don't just ask the question, but I answer it. And I keep on answering it because it's one of those, it's like an onion. You just keep peeling it back and back and back. And maybe unlike an onion, you find out usually when we get down to what is real and what is realistic, the worst thing that can happen rarely does. I'm not saying it never does, but it rarely does. For instance, someone may say, well, I could be downsized. I could lose my job. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, I'm out of work. What's the worst thing that can happen? I lose my money. What's the worst thing that can happen? We lose our home. What's the worst thing that can happen? We end up on the street and we're homeless. What's the worst thing that can happen? And my wife divorces me and I lose my family. Now, I'm not saying that that never happens to someone who is downsized or loses their job, but I dare say, I'm venturing a guess here, that's not typical. That typically is not what happens when someone loses their job. They may lose money. They may lose their savings. They may even lose their house. But when we carry it to its maybe illogical conclusion of, okay, this leads to that, which leads to this, and it's this horrific domino effect that we carry to its ultimate conclusion, which we could say, and it results in me losing my health and I eventually die. Well, I would venture to guess that not very many people who lose their jobs lose their life as a result. Okay, certainly people can take their lives, and that's never an answer, but you know what I'm saying. You carry something and you just keep on carrying it, and you keep on carrying it, and you keep on carrying it, and you keep on carrying it forward, and it usually is just not that bad. Now, the other question that I will ask, but I don't ask it first, and this is where I've gotten criticized. Okay, what's the best thing that can happen? The third thing has to be some way to balance these two things. Now, I know people who they love to sit down and they love to draw a line, a vertical line right down the middle of a sheet of paper. On one side, put the pluses or the pros, and on the other side, the minuses or the cons, and start listing things out. I guess I sort of do that mentally. I don't necessarily sit down with a piece of paper and write it all out, but I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking about, but what do you do when there's an opportunity and there's another opportunity and they both seem to be decent opportunities? Or what if there is a third one? Boy, and that always gets sticky, doesn't it? It always gets sticky when, and we love choices. We want choices, but you go into a supermarket and, okay, well, what, I mean, take a look at the brands of pickles, just pickles or mustard. I mean, some of these really mundane kind of things. And the selection is just crazy, crazy broad. A wide variety of things to choose from. And research has proven that when we are faced with too many choices, it's easier for us to just not make a choice. It's easier for us to just leave the aisle altogether and we don't need pickles. Why? Because, well, we can't decide. We can't decide between this brand and that brand and this other brand and that brand. Yeah, we get overcome. We get overwhelmed with all of the decisions, the choices. It's pretty rare, I think, for the average person, and I'm certainly average, I think it's rare for the average person to face a lot of good, seemingly good choices. You see it in professional athletics. The NFL draft is, you know, it's ensuing, and of course players are drafted, and then you've got all the free agency, and particularly when it comes to free agency things. And if someone is an unrestricted free agent, that means that, well, the market is theirs. Now, assuming that they're a talented player and that they are wanted, and so it could be that Team A wants them and Team B wants them and Team C wants them and Team D and E even want them. It could be that, you know, there are people that are certainly lesser skilled than Peyton Manning who have people lobbying for their services. But you take Peyton Manning, I mean, you take that contest, if you please, that happened, what, 2 years ago with various cities and teams vying for his services. He's flying around. He's going from place to place and he's surveying all of this and they're looking at him and they're kind of agonizing over his neck issues. I mean, how do you choose Denver over Miami over someplace else? And I'm sure that was not a terribly easy decision for him. He'd never been there before. He'd certainly been wanted before, but now to be wanted by so many different teams and at a point in his career where he knew this is it. This is the decision. There's not going to be any do-overs in this. And when you get to be a certain age, and now physically he and I are not anywhere close to the same age, but he's in the last chapter of his professional NFL career. I may be in the last chapter of my business career. And so in that sense, that there are some similarities in that, you know, this decision, it weighs heavier, just like it would weigh heavier. My wife and I, Lord willing, probably will have one more move that we will make in our life. And so when we compare ourselves to our 32-year-old son and his wife, who are making the second move of their life, full well knowing that this isn't necessarily going to be their last house. It's not like they're looking for the house that they will grow old in. That's not on their mind. They're young. They have a young family. They've got a son who's a few months old and a daughter who's 2, and they're just at a different place. Now, my wife and I, empty nesters, yeah, you know what we're thinking. Okay, so, you know, the large 4-bedroom house with a pool, and okay, it's great for the grandkids and stuff, but our next house, we're likely to do what we've seen many of our neighbors do, by the way, and that's downsize. So we're looking for something different. Well, Peyton Manning was looking for something different than the kid coming out of college who's looking to land at a team. And so I think you have to weigh the decisions, both good and bad, when you ask the question, what's the worst thing that can happen? What's the best thing that can happen? Those answers are going to be different depending on where you are on the timeline of life and on the timeline of where you are with your career. And we're talking today primarily about business decisions. So opportunities happen, or you go looking for opportunities, or you create opportunities. Let's shell this down. There are two big, big schools of thought when you take a look, particularly at all of the media, and I include social media in that, and I include blogs, and I certainly include books. And there is that job, that J-O-B, and there is that entrepreneurship, that own your own thing. But there is also a third category, and that is the category of people who sometimes do things under the auspices of a franchise, or that's just the best way that I know to do it. And so you could say, well, is that a hybrid of the two? It depends. There's all different kinds of franchise opportunities. But typically a franchise opportunity is one where there is some kind of a pattern, some kind of a template, some kind of a support system that basically allows you to do your own thing. But those things that you may not want to do, as your own thing, those might be provided for you. Hence the value of a franchise and the reason that many, many people are attracted to that kind of a business model. So let's take these three business models and assume that a person is, because I've seen this and I've seen this recently, a person who is approached with a franchise opportunity, a person who is approached with a job opportunity, or a person who has in their head an idea that they fully believe in, that they've got strong faith in, that could be an entrepreneurial opportunity. That is entrepreneurial outside the realm of a job and outside the realm of a franchise. And so you've got these three balls that this person is trying to juggle, and they are trying to decide which of these would be the most beneficial, which of these has the highest reward coupled with the lowest risk. They've all got risks. They've all got rewards. How do you decide? The conversation that ensued resulted because this person had bought into all of the hype and, well, let's just stick with hype. All of the hype about business ownership. This person was bent toward the belief, not because he held the belief, but because everybody around him seems to hold the belief, including social media, that you're just stupid if you don't do your own thing, that you are going to be far less successful and you're just not going to be anywhere near the human being that you should be if you have a job or if you did something that was templatized like a franchise, as opposed to doing your own thing. You need to do your own thing. You need to do your own thing. And hearing that and hearing that and hearing that had begun to weigh heavy. I made an observation that I think made a point. It was intended clearly to make a point. And the point was this: not every person and not every occupation and not every achievement can be done in any one of those areas. Some achievements require one of those areas more than the other. For instance, I said, there are, and I don't remember what the number was, but I had looked it up. Are there 26 teams in the NFL? I don't know. However many teams there are in the NFL, however many teams there are in the NHL, my favorite sport, hockey. That's how many teams there are, period. So let's stick with my favorite sport, hockey. And let's say that a person's ambitions are, and their life goal is, they would like to be a head coach in the National Hockey League. Well, that's very different than owning the team. The guy that owns the Dallas Stars does not coach the Dallas Stars. Yeah, that's why I'm picking hockey, because if we went with football, see, I'd have to use the Dallas Cowboys in there. Well, all bets are off, you know, because Jerry Jones, he owns the team, he runs the team, he coaches the team. If he could wear the uniform and survive a hit, he would do it. Okay, well, in hockey, greater intelligence exists. Did I say that? Yeah, I did. So the guy who owns the Dallas Stars does not general manage them. He's not the president. Jim Leitz is the president. He oversees the whole business shebang. Joe Nieuwendyk is the general manager. He's responsible for the players. He's responsible for the talent. The head coach is responsible for coaching that talent in individual games and practices and game strategy. Now, if you wanted to be a head coach in the National Hockey League, there are only so many opportunities, and every single one of them is an employee. These are jobs. They're good jobs, but let's say that a young man says, that's my lifelong goal. I want to be a coach in the National Hockey League. Well, you're going to have a job. There's no way around it. So are we to say that, well, you know, there's no way that you can be a head coach in the NHL and possibly be satisfied? There's no way you can live up to your potential because it's a job. You don't own it. No, we don't think that way. We know better. That doesn't make any sense at all. But in every other area of life, just about outside of professional sports, we apply this logic that if you don't own it, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. There are a lot of really smart, bright people out on the web who have jobs. Very bright, very creative, and very well compensated people, I might add, who are able to do some things that if they owned the joint, they couldn't do. Just like the guy who coaches a national hockey team, he can do some things that he couldn't do. He couldn't do if he owned something, because he can't own anything to give himself that opportunity. And if he did own it, he wouldn't be able to take the opportunity. Now, other people might say, well, that's a crazy ambition. He's stupid. He's stupid for wanting to coach the team when he could own the team. See, there's where the money's at. He should want to own the team. What if he doesn't want to own the team? What if he likes hockey and he wants to be involved in the hockey? He doesn't care about the business stuff. He wants to coach and compete in hockey. Very different. These are hard things to distance ourselves from. All of the noise, and that includes the noise of our loved ones and the noise of friends and family who honestly probably have our best interest, but they can't climb inside our head and see what we see and feel what we feel. And for that reason, I'm increasingly steering clear of trying to urge or tell people what they should do. People have to decide these things for themselves. It's a super individualized decision. And the more you seek outside help, sometimes the heavier that decision can weigh on us, because we do have people who will freely tell us what we ought to do. And of course, you know, they don't have a dog in this hunt, right? So it's easy. It's easy for somebody to tell us what to do when the decision made rightly or wrongly isn't going to impact their life one way or the other. But this is our life. It's going to impact our life. Job, entrepreneurship, or a franchise. I can't tell you which one is better for you. I can tell you this, that I don't think that you should turn your nose up at any one of them. Certainly, I don't think you should turn your nose up at two of the three of them to exclusively focus on one, because you've got everybody telling you, oh, take the job, take the job, take the job. You're an idiot if you don't. Oh, you're an idiot if you take the job. You don't want to take the job. Don't take the job. And usually it's going to be between those two. Usually the franchise is going to be way out on the periphery. But increasingly there are some franchise. And when I say franchise, you might be thinking McDonald's, Burger King. I'm not really thinking that. I'm thinking more of all the things that I know that people are doing now, particularly home-based kind of things. Things that people are doing now and things that people are doing in an online arena, that it's their thing. They own it. They can do whatever they want, but they've gotten tethered with, well, I know a number of people, for instance, who have gotten involved in various fitness products and fitness organizations. It's their business. It's their home-based business, but they are peddling or promoting certain products, certain programs in the health or fitness arena. I know other people are, well, hey, take a company right here in Dallas, Texas. Take Mary Kay Cosmetics. Come on, there's a great example, kind of what I'm thinking about, where these women, I guess there may be some guys, but particularly women who are these Mary Kay Cosmetics, I don't know, what do they call them, consultants? It's their business. They're building their own business, but they're not coming up with new products. They're not in their kitchen or their home laboratory creating cosmetics. Those products are supplied. There is a template for their business. It is their business, but this template is provided. This opportunity is provided by Mary Kay. Well, there are countless companies all over the planet that are doing the same kind of thing. So that's what I mean primarily when I'm thinking franchise. Now, it could also be someone who, you know, ponies up $1 million to have a McDonald's franchise. Same kind of a thing. They own it. It's theirs. There's a high price for admission, and for good reason, because the brand is so strong. So if we're facing a decision, and I know many people are facing a decision, do I take this job? I'm not so much talking about taking this job over that job. I'm talking about when we're wrestling with, do we take a job? Do we create our own kind of an opportunity, or do we do some hybrid as a franchise? And it's great if you've got multiple people that are vying for your services as far as a job goes. And no, it doesn't always just go to the highest bidder. Yes, we want the money and we want as much money as we can get. But you and I both know there are countless other things that are involved. I know some people who have taken a lot less money because one opportunity was in a place where they just really wanted to be. And the other opportunity was in a place that they just really didn't want to be there at all. And there wasn't any amount of money that could overcome that. many years ago, I was faced with an opportunity to go to Kansas City. Now, no offense to those of you in Kansas City, because sometime later, I faced an opportunity to go to St. Louis, and no offense to any of you in St. Louis. I happen to love both cities. I just couldn't see myself being in either one of those cities, though, and I turned those opportunities down. I had opportunities as a young man to go to the West Coast. I had opportunities as a young man to go to the East Coast. I turned all of those opportunities down, not because they weren't grand opportunities. They were. They were terrific. Some of them were more terrific than others, but they were terrific opportunities. Yeah, I'm not an East Coast or West Coast guy. I'm a guy from this part of the country. This is home for me, and there's no amount of logic. There's no amount of what's the worst thing that can happen, what's the best thing that can happen. See, this is where it gets really murky. Because for me, that didn't necessarily enter in. What entered in then was this third component, this component of it feeling right. It just didn't feel right. Now, there are parts of Kansas City and there are parts of St. Louis that are just, they're remarkable, I think. Love to go visit. But at an emotional level, I could not. It just didn't make sense for me. It didn't feel right. I couldn't articulate it then. And now that I've got 20, 30 years perspective on it, I still can't articulate it. I've got friends in both cities. I like both cities, but I don't like it as well as where I'm at. I like Dallas-Fort Worth a whole lot better. Well, you've got those kinds of feelings. You know, home for you may be, you know, I mentioned where it was snowing today and it's, you know, hot as blue blazes here. Well, there are people that they can't imagine living in a climate like I live in any more than I can imagine it being April and there's snow on the ground. No, I don't have any idea what it's like to live in that kind of a climate. I've never lived in that kind, and I don't want to live in that kind of. And you get into summer months and there are people who come down here from northern climes and are like, man, how do you guys survive this 100-degree heat? Well, we do it pretty simply. We stay inside. We do the same thing in the summer that you guys might do in the winter. We stay inside where it's cool, where there's air conditioning, or we sit in the shade where there's a breeze blowing. We don't go stand out and just bake ourselves like potatoes. So, but these are things that are in the frame of our own reference, and they're defining things. They're just so personal and they're so defining, and there's no escaping those things. I have seen people make decisions that made themselves miserable because they neglected this third thing. They were not true to themselves. They were not true to who they listened to outside pressure. They saw the allure of maybe the money, the prestige, the position, and they sacrificed in more personal ways. And you just can't make that back. I just don't think you can make that back. And it's very difficult to make it work. It's most sad to me to recount the people that I've seen in my career who took an opportunity two time zones away, their family, their wife's family, and uprooted and went because the opportunity was admittedly a big opportunity and they took advantage of it and it wrecked their marriage. It wrecked their home. I'm not saying that always happens, but I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen more than a handful of times. It's just sad to me because there's something in my gut, in my heart that tells me, you know, had they just pulled back and surveyed the situation with a much bigger perspective, life may have been different. It may have been very, very different. So I think we have to really dig deep. And the hard part, I think, in this last part of it passing kind of the gut check has got to be to make sure that it's your gut and it's not the fact that you've got all this noise entering your head and all these people telling you what they think you ought to do and what they think is right for you to do. And this is where I think you've just got to get some sense of being true to yourself. And I know what people are thinking because I've heard people articulate it and I've been there myself. When we get to this third step, so we've got step number one, what's the worst thing that can happen? Step three, what's the best thing that can happen? And step three, what just feels right? What just feels right here? And when it comes to doing what just feels right, we're scared about what people will say, and we're scared about what people will think, and we're scared that we will have maybe passed up an opportunity that may never come our way again. And we tend to override that second thing. What's the best thing that can happen? And we tend to amplify that, and we're willing to negate how we might really feel about it. I don't know many times with people that's I've seen that work. I personally have never been able to get past number three. For me, number three has been, that's been the deal breaker. I have surveyed opportunities in my lifetime where what's the worst thing that can happen? Okay, I get past that. What's the best thing that can happen? Okay, that all pans out. How do I really feel about it? I can't get past that one. That one is either a yes or a no. For me, it's very binary. Now, it may not be for you. It may be this massive area that is awash with gray. For me, it's not. For me, it either Kansas City. I knew Kansas City. I was familiar with Kansas City. I travel to Kansas City every week. No. I mean, I sound like Psy on Duck Dynasty. No. I just, and that quickly, I could ascertain it. St. Louis, I entertained that one a little bit longer, but not much. And I traveled to St. Louis, not every week, but almost every week for a good long while. I couldn't see myself there. I couldn't see my family there. It just didn't feel right. And I couldn't get, and it didn't matter how big the opportunity was. It didn't. And both opportunities were solid opportunities. I was like, sigh. No, I just, now maybe you can get past that. Maybe you're willing to wrestle longer. My admonition is as much time as you're willing to wrestle with the first two things, you need to wrestle with that third one. I mean, don't just dismiss it and say, oh, listen, the opportunity is so grand, it ain't going to matter. Oh, yeah, I know we're two time zones away from all the family and all the friends that we've known, but yeah, we'll make new friends. We'll create new family. These are tough, tough things, and people every day, every hour of every day, people are wrestling with these kinds of things. So let me end by telling you, I'm wrestling with a few things right now, and I'm really, I don't know that I would categorize them as a job versus entrepreneurship versus, you know, a franchise kind of an opportunity, but, you know, maybe kind of sorta, because much like the hockey coach analogy, yeah, I'm weighing some opportunities that where the opportunity to accomplish some things that are important to me might be more widespread, might be even deeper by being able to do those in the context of something else than what I've traditionally thought. Maybe, I don't know. If I knew, then it'd be no decision to make, right? It'd be an easy decision to make, but because these aren't always easy decisions to make, we have to weigh these things. We have to consider things. And it does weigh on me that I'm at a point in my life where, well, I don't want to be facing these decisions every year or every other year. You know, I'm kind of ready to make a decision and move on. And the decision that I made some years ago was to set about to help primarily small business owners with their business, to help leaders and executives and owners be better at business. And I've made no secret that it stems from really three things: to get new customers, to make customers happy, and not go crazy in the process. Now, if you think about those three things that I'm focused on, and you think about, well, how can you best do that? Well, there's all kinds of ways to do that. You could do that working for somebody else. You can do that working for yourself. You could do that being associated with an organization whose work it is to do that. Well, how do you know which one's right for you? All I know to do is to ask the question, what's the worst thing that can happen? What's the best thing that can happen? And what feels right? You know, does this just pass the gut check? And I'm in the throes of those various processes as we speak. I don't know yet what I'm going to do. And some of these decisions, by the way, they get made for us. I mean, I'm no different than the next guy in that there have been a variety of things that I have turned down, and I'm sure that there have been a variety of things that have turned me down. I can remember back as a young man a few opportunities that I really thought I wanted to make happen, and, you know, for various reasons, they didn't happen. I look back now, and I'm thankful for it, but at the time, I wasn't very happy about it. So sometimes life does pick us, and sometimes we pick life. I do firmly believe in the whole Seth Godin notion of taking permission instead of waiting to be chosen. But come on, the fact of life is, in many areas, we do have to work hard to be chosen. You know, tell the professional athlete, you know, don't wait to be chosen. Take permission. Well, no, you can't. In their context, you can't. And maybe in your context, you can't. Now, I think there are a ton of things that we can take control of, and there are a ton of things that we can take permission. But because we don't live our lives all by ourselves, yeah, we've got to seek and get permission in certain areas of life. And I don't bemoan that. I don't think that's a cop out, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Sometimes I've been chosen, sometimes I've not been chosen. For me, it's worked out so far. So some of the opportunities that I'm considering admittedly involve that. They involve seeing if you are selected. My attitude is if you want to be selected and you don't get selected, well, there you go. That's a decision. Now you do plan B if that was your plan A. Not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's kind of how I've approached it throughout my life. It's worked out for me. It may not work out for everybody, and remains to be seen if it'll work out for me. I hope so. What do you do when you're facing a decision? Do you do something different than my three-step process? What's the worst thing that can happen? What's the best thing that can happen? And how does it feel? Does it feel right? Are you more analytic than that? I'm strategic, but I don't mind telling you, I'm emotional. In that, I know I need to be true to my emotions because it's how I'm wired. I mean, I'm the guy that doesn't have any problem telling somebody how much I care about them. I don't have a problem telling a friend that I love them. Now, I know some people that aren't anywhere near as emotional as that. So that's what I mean when I say emotional. I don't mean I'm a drama queen. I'm far from that. I'd like to hear how you approach such things in life. And I hope whatever decisions you're facing, I hope that you give it the due consideration. I hope it works out. I hope you make the very best decision for you and your family. Me and my family, we are here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, happily so. BulaNetwork.com. I hope you will subscribe to the podcast. I'd love it if you'd leave me a review over at iTunes. I appreciate you listening. I'll see you next time. My name is Randy Cantrell, BulaNetwork.com. This is the Yellow Studio.